Welcome to the Repost Non-League Show, and my guests tonight are the one and only Mr. Chelmsford City himself, Mr. Spencer Gore, and of course, coach and good friend of the show, Craig Reddy from Merthyr Town. We join the show as Spencer talks about Chelmsford City.
I've told this story so many times, but I was never going to be a footballer, so therefore I was probably never going to be a manager. But so owning a club was the next best thing for me, and I set that as a goal a long time ago to own a club, and it was always going to be Chelmsford. I had offers of other clubs. A friend of mine, Simon, owns Eastbourne Borough now. He asked me to get involved there a few years back. Southend approached me about buying them a few years ago. But for me, it's something that I knew that if I wanted to do it, I'm an all or nothing person. So I've been down there all day today. I'm there most days. So I knew it had to be my local team, because otherwise I'd just be travelling backwards and forwards. So I first got involved officially back in 2007 when I set up my first business, just helping out down there because I had a 3-month non-compete. And then I tried to buy the club in 2000, just after COVID, 2001, something like that. And it didn't happen. And I've sort of given up on it to a certain degree because the owners had told me they didn't want to sell. And then I got a text message May the 11th last year at 7:45 in the morning. So I'm retiring as chairman, and we're going to sell the club. Are you still interested? And that's sort of when it all really kicked off. It happened quite fast. It was a tricky process because they gave us no due diligence whatsoever. I didn't have access to the bank account for probably 2 months after I took over the club. So it was far from smooth. But that's the story, Ted.
I mean, as a businessman, I mean, it was a little bit sort of, I wonder, I suppose terrifying might be the too big of a word, but if you haven't seen the books on something like that, I mean, especially going into a football club, I mean, how sort of nervous was you sort of going into that sort of, stage of buying the club?
It was definitely a heart over head moment. I pulled out of buying it 3 times because of that. Dan Watkins, who is the 40% shareholder, lives out in Hong Kong, so pretty much as soon as he got involved as an investor 5-6 years ago, whenever that was now, he got a promotion to CEO of JP Morgan out in Asia Pacific, moved out to Hong Kong, and he's not been around. So it was really going in blind, and I sat down with him, and there was a point where I was in Rome on holiday last July, I think it would have been, and I said to him, I can't go ahead with this. They're not giving me the information. I'm going away on two weeks holiday. They haven't got enough money for the end of the month's payroll. And we had a conversation, and the outcome was that we're pretty much sure there's not going to be more than £1 million worth of debt, and we hope it's nearer £250,000 worth of debt. But as long as it's within those ballparks, we'll gamble, because otherwise the club goes bust. And that was something that I wasn't going to let happen, and nor was Dan. So I gambled. It turned out we were probably in the middle of those two figures. So it was, a bit of a shock, but not a big shock. It was a bit of a disappointment, but not a shock, let's put it that way.
Mm. I mean, getting out of that club, though, I mean, on that day you sort of signed the forms and everything else to take over the club, it must have been a dream come true for somebody like yourself that's actually been trying to get hold of the club for, as you said, quite a period of time. And actually sort of being a supporter as well and actually getting hold of it. I mean, what was sort of your reaction to that on that day, and, Dan's as well, but also as well, supporters-wise, what was that like as well, knowing that a fellow supporter actually bought the club?
Well, the day I actually signed the forms was my last day of holiday. I'd been out in Greece for 2 weeks. I was sat in the reception of the hotel, and I transferred the money across and signed the DocuSign to take over the club. I flew home back to England, drove from Heathrow straight to Witham, who you'll know from your league, because we were playing them in the Tolson Darcy Memorial Cup, so my first game in charge, technically, I saw the last 5 minutes. But as I pulled into the car park, we were winning, and by the time I'd got into the ground, we were losing. so that was my introduction to the game. And then we got home, and that night, the captain of the women's team sent me a nice message saying, welcome to the club, congratulations. And she sent me a link to a video called The False Nine, which is a documentary they'd made about the women's team a year or two earlier, and how the women's team had really helped with some of the mental health side of things. And to be honest, I was sitting on the sofa in tears. And it all built up over sort of 2 or 3 months. And I hadn't really realised that actually, as well as the men's first team, we've got the women's team, we've got the youth team, we've got the disability team, we've got the walking football, we've got a football foundation, I didn't even know we had a foundation. I have a football foundation I didn't know I had at the time. And so it was, it all happened so quick, as I say, and with no due diligence. It was all a bit of a steep learning curve.
So, I mean, are you a chairman now that's over all of that? Do you know what I mean? And making sure that, that the kids know who you are, and, the walking football people know who you are, and, and this sort of stuff. I mean, are you one of those chairmen that likes to make sure that everybody's because let's be honest, there's two or three types of chairman. One of them is where they're just the chairman of the first team. Others of them are, the sort of, how can you put it, the big, the father of the whole lot, if you know what I mean, and they'll go and see
Yeah.
games and they'll go and see that sort of stuff. I mean, I know you're a busy man with businesses and stuff, but I mean, do you try and be that sort of type of chairman?
Yeah, definitely. When I took over, that we had Chelmsford City women's team and Chelmsford City youth team, neither of which were affiliated to the Chelmsford City men's team because of historical issues where, long and short of it is they just didn't trust the previous regime to look after the money. And so they'd set up separate teams. And it wasn't just the previous owners. It had been a historical thing where in the past owners had not treated them in the way they should have been treated. So one of the first things I did was to start working on bringing them all under the same umbrella. And actually, a couple of weeks back now, maybe a month or so ago, the women have affiliated with the men's team now, and we've agreed they're going to play all their home games at Melbourne, which is fantastic. It's the first time in their history it's happened. And I was talking to Emma tonight about something else actually, and she said it was nothing to do with the club. She said we've wanted to affiliate with the club for a long, long time, but she said we now know the right people in charge of the club in me and Dan, and that was incredibly nice to hear. But that's what we're trying to do. Is our motto is many minds, one heart. We're so much stronger as a big unit than we are as one individual. So we're trying to bring it all back under one umbrella, trying to build a proper community club, because that's, in my opinion, probably the best way to make it sustainable.
And what's it like though? I mean, with the going in there, and I mean, are the youth players sort of coming up to you now as well, and some of the parents and that. I mean, do you get to know? Are you getting to that sort of stage now where you know quite a lot what's going on with the kids stuff? As you said, it must have been difficult for them all before. So now it's like one big family. Is that must sort of like, make you feel really good about taking over the club and seeing it coming in the right direction?
Certainly with the women's team, so we invited a few of them over as well for our men's kit launch and things like that. I've been over to, Chris is trying to get me out to play for the walking football now. I've just turned 50, and I've seen them play, and I'm embarrassed to say I don't think I'll be anywhere near good enough. So I'm just just happy watching them at the moment. We're still struggling, to be honest, with the youth team. We're trying to get them involved more. We've sat down with conversations and we've offered them all sorts to try and get them involved, but for whatever reason, they don't feel comfortable doing that yet. It takes. I was asked a question in the very first fans forum that I started by one of our fans saying, we've had previous chairmen that have come in and promised the world and this, that, and the other. What are you going to do today to make me trust you? And I said, well, no, I'm not going to do anything today to make you trust me. Trust is built up over time. I'll say I'm going to do something, and I'll either do it or I won't do it. And if I do it, hopefully you'll trust me a little bit more. And if I don't do it, you'll trust me less. And over time, that will build up. And actually, last Monday, we did a review of the year, and so I went through all of their successes and challenges. And then I said, right, first question from me, Alan, do you trust me any more than you did last year? And that it's just obviously going to take a little bit longer to get the youth team to trust the main club. So I don't know the youth team as well as I'd like to, because they're quite happy running as a separate entity at the moment.
I think if I was a Chelsea City fan, one thing you just said then, it was just a sentence that you just used then, but I think I'd be more trusting in you from just that one sentence that you made there, because straight away you said, your strengths and your challenges, where other people that you would have been there would have said strengths and failures.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? And for me, that straight away rings bells to me, saying, look, these things aren't failures, they're challenges. And that for me, if I was a fan of Chelmsford City, that straight away would make me trust you 100% straight away, just by that little sentence you said then. And you probably didn't even know that that's you said
Well,
what you.
actually, now you've picked that up, I'll pull myself up on that now, because I don't not normally use in challenges. I use the word opportunities. So I've let myself down there. But yeah, it's like all this stuff. I've said to the fans, we'll make mistakes. We're humans. We'll make loads of mistakes. But I promise you, we'll always make them for the right reasons. We were trying to do the right thing. And if we get them wrong, we'll fail fast. So as soon as we know we've got it wrong, we'll change it. and try and correct it. But you know that we're humans; everyone makes mistakes. Failures aren't a bad thing as long as you learn from them and don't make the same mistake. When you start making the same mistake more than once, that's a problem. But if you don't make a mistake, it probably means you're not pushing yourself out of your comfort zone enough. And that's you know, we were called by one of our own fans the most boring team in the country a few weeks back because we've not had a relegation or a promotion for 17 years. They've had nothing to go for. So I said, well, maybe that's the most stable team in the country. But it's we want to be making mistakes because we want to be pushing forward and we want to be doing things differently. If we do the same as everyone else, we're up against teams, and you know, you never know what's true. But from what we hear, we'd be up against teams that have got double our budget. You can't just do the same as them because you won't get as good a result. So you've got to do things differently. And when you do things differently, you're going to get things wrong.
Well, you're not going to
Embrace it,
be able to bring in Andy Carroll just like
though. Not
that,
anymore. Not
are
anymore.
it's fact what you said. I still remember going back, and I don't know if you both of you guys have heard this sort of statement before. I remember my very first boss saying to me, and he said to me, "Dave," he said, "one thing you got to remember in the job that you're in." He said, "It's this." He said, "If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got," and that always sort of
100%.
sticks in my mind all the time. And it's just about. You said it in a different wording, but you said exactly the same there.
It's 100% true. Yeah, with my businesses, EMJ and AMJ, we're competing against businesses that have got hundreds of millions of pounds, not tens of millions of pounds. And when we started, we had tens of pounds, never mind tens of millions of pounds. And you have to do things differently because you can't compete with them on the sort of money that they've got for anything. So we just had to do stuff differently. And I remember people constantly asking us, "What staff have you got?" And we'd be like five, six, whatever it was, as we were getting bigger. And we thought you had 50 or 100 because we're just making noise. And there's a guy I know who talks about, it's not the best product that wins, it's the best known product. And that's what we're trying to do is get our name out there and get some buzz and get the momentum going.
So I mean, with the football yourself, I mean this season. Then I mean, it's your first full season in full charge of the club. I mean, how did it sort of come about to get Mr. Harrop involved and getting him in as manager? And was that a real process for you? I mean, was there a lot of people applying for the job, or did you look at it straight away and go, "Well, I've seen what he's done at Braintree, I've seen what he's done here and here, and he was the man for me."
A little bit of both, funny enough. So Robbie had obviously been with the club for 5, 6 years, and one of the things I said when I took over was, "There's been so much change that no matter what he does, within reason, I'm not going to sack Robbie because I need some continuity in the club." And he's a lovely guy. He's done wonders for the club over the previous years. He's a safe pair of hands. Let's stick with him this year, and then we'll have the conversation at the end of the season and see where we are. What I hadn't planned for was him resigning. And you know, he's got two businesses that he runs on the side. I say on the side, two very successful businesses, and the football's really on the side. And I used to speak to him almost daily, and I told him that my aspirations were to go full time, and he very graciously said, "Look, I can't go full time, so I'm going to resign now." I think it was February time to give you them, as long as possible to find a new manager before next season. So it was a bit unusual that you don't normally get that sort of transitional period, which was good and bad. Good in that it was the first time we'd gone through that process, but it probably became much more time consuming than we would have wanted, really. We had over 100 applicants. It was amazing the amount of people that we spoke to. Robbie was sorry, Robbie. Ange was the first person I met because he was out of work. He'd not long left Braintree, so it was a nice easy one that he wasn't in a job anyway, so there was no real conflicts there at all. And I said to him that I'm going to go for a process, even though we like you and you've come across really well. And we went for a process, and he was the best person that we interviewed that had applied for the job. So, I mean, we had like the assistant manager for Italy applying. We had League Two managers. We had a guy that had managed in the Championship last season that we spoke to. It was phenomenal, the level of interest. But by the time we sifted through 100 CVs and realised that, 10 of them had played Championship manager and therefore that was their qualification. And then some of, so, you whittle it down and there's probably a short list of 10 that are realistic that you want. And With all due respect to you, Craig, it's an interesting one when you see managers because they, if they're half of them that are applying are either in a job so you can't take them or they've been sacked for not doing a very good job somewhere else. So it's there's not many other industries where you're looking at someone thinking, oh, he could be great, he's just been sacked. But yeah, it was interesting. And we were talking it down. And we interviewed three or four people, and Ange was the one that stood out for us.
So I mean, he's in there, and as I say, he's a lovely bloke. Spoke to him a few times, you know, myself on the show as well. And so, I mean, what is the sort of the goal for this season? You know, I mean, I take you in, Andy. I don't want you to tell us the ins and outs of your conversation, but I mean, with that sort of conversation with Angelo, I mean, are you expecting to sort of push to, you know, back into the playoff situation again, or trying to get through and get, you know, as you said, you haven't got as much, you know, in the bank as some of these bigger clubs have got. But are you sort of looking at it and thinking, well, look, you know, we stand a chance this year of getting that sort of promotion after 17 years?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's we make no secret of it that we playoffs is the minimum requirement for this season for us in terms of what we deem a success. Doesn't mean that if we don't get it, we'll do anything drastic because we're not stupid enough to think that anything in football is guaranteed. We've got a 2-year goal to be in the National League. We've got a 5-year goal to be in the Football League. Ideally, it would happen this year, but we've got a squad of 18, 17 of which weren't employees of the club last year. If you include Harry Barbara, who we had on loan from Ipswich, who we've now signed, there was two of them. But there's a whole new squad there, so it's going to take them a while to gel. It's going to take them a while to get used to it. As a club, we're full time for the first time in our history, so it's going to take us a little while to get used to that and all the things that go with that. But yeah, the goal is playoffs on the pitch and off the pitch. We've set some targets to have an average of 2,000 crowd. And to be National League ready by the end of this season. So there's a few things we need to do for the ground to make it National League ready. But with a view that if we don't go up this year, that we're really going for it next year. Not that we're not really going for it this year, but you know what I mean.
I
So
mean, a nice first away trip though, Western Super Bear.
nice local one.
Yeah.
We were talking about that today. It's about as far as we would go without an overnight stay. So it's going to be a long old day on the coach. Probably about eight or 9 hours on the coach for the boys. So it's never easy when you got a well, no game's easy in this league. We saw how tight it was at the top of the table last year. But yeah, it's we're going to go to every game, thinking we've got a good chance of winning. We've whenever we go anywhere as Chelmsford City, we try and overperform. The year before last, before I was involved, their budget was probably 16th, 17th in the league, and they finished second. They massively overperformed. Last year, our budget was about 15th in the league, and we were, I think, 11th in the end. So we always are aiming to overperform, and we don't believe it is just down to budget. We've increased our budget incredibly this year because we've had to go full time. But as I said before, there were teams with double our budget. And so you can't just rely on that. You've got to look at things that don't cost you money and say, well, can we be the fittest team in the league? Can we have the best team spirit in the league? It's things like that that cost you nothing. And then it's things that might cost you a little bit, but not massively. Can we give them a really good, nutritious breakfast? Can we give them a good, nutritious lunch? Can we give them the good training facilities? And it's a combination of all of these things. And then at the end of the day, it's a little bit like the draw that you don't get a deflected own goal in the 95th minute that costs you a game. Or it's so many variables. You just got to sort of hope for the best at the end of the day, haven't
I mean, I know speaking to Gary McPherson last week, and his first away game, which was this weekend, was down to Torquay. He said to me, he said, look, I'm just glad it's first game of the season when the weather's probably going to be all right,
Yeah, exactly.
rather than sort of in mid-February when you've got to go down there when it could.
Yeah, we had that last year. I think it was October last year. I remember I was literally sat next to Neil Warnock, and he had a blanket over his legs. That's how cold it was.
Well, I mean, is there games in there though? As a, I would say, as a fan, you know, is there games in there this season that you look at? You know, I'm an Arsenal fan, so the first games I look for every season is, of course, is the Spurs game, or you know, or ones around my birthday, see if you can get there to go to, or etc. etc. But I mean, is there, you know, as a Chelmsford fan, is there you look at it and go, these are the ones I'm sort of looking at, and you sort of go through that fixture list to, you know, for other reason, if it's a derby or if it's one that you're really excited because you've not been to the ground before, or things like that? I mean, is there games there that you're really looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a proper derby at such at the moment because we've got Braintree in the league above us. That would be a good derby match whenever we play them. And then we've got Billericay that just missed out coming up from the league below. That would normally be a good derby. So we haven't got those as such. But for me, there's a couple. Enfield, I like because my business partner lives in Enfield and it's his local team. So that's always a nice one. And then the one that really jumped out this year, I couldn't help it. It was almost like fate. Was a good friend of mine that I used to play football with owns Eastbourne Borough, and we've got them last game of the season. So it's we went 4-0 up against them at our place last year and beat them 4-2 in the end. And then we lost. I think it was 3-1 at their place. So I said we did them on away goals, but yeah, it'll be the last game of the season. So I'll hope that one of us wins the league that day and the other one secures a good playoff position and goes up that way.
I mean, just looking at it there. I mean, you say your last few games, you've got Enfield at home, Dagenham and Redbridge away, Maidenhead United at home, Chesham away, and then, as you say, Eastbourne at home for a finish. It's
Yeah.
not quite a bad little run-in.
Well, it could be an easier one, I think. Yeah. And Dagenham would be a great one. I remember watching Chelsea in the Six-Senior Cup final there years ago when it was played there. And obviously with the Andy Carroll connections, that I'm sure that'll be a fun one for the fans when we play there.
So, I mean, one of the things, I mean, it'd be wrong for me not to ask you, and we've mentioned her once before a couple of times. What's she like to work with?
Caroline,
Yeah.
she's brilliant. She's a proper fan. I don't know how many generations. I think it's 3 generations of season ticket holder. She was involved with the club when I was first involved back in 2007, and she was one of the first people I invited to join the board when I took over. There was some obvious choices for me. There's a guy called Dave Selby, who is just someone I think having known various different board members over the years, someone that has never ever shown any sort of self-interest other than the club doing well. He's the club historian, so he's a great person to have around. And then Caroline was one of the other two that jumped out straight away because she's club through and through. She's so enthusiastic about doing it, and she's got a really good black book of connections in football through her Sky Sports and BBC work. And plus having the connection to the women's team, I knew would help us trying to bring them back on board. So yeah, she's great to have her. She was literally up there on Friday. She'll hate me for saying this, but cleaning out the referee's room and buying air fresheners because it stank of mouldy football boots and putting up a new Chelmsford City crest on by the changing rooms. She just wants it looking perfect, like all of us do. It's great having people like that around that just dedicate so much time and effort to making the club better.
And in all fairness, I know you say she wouldn't want you to say that, but it's not something that you know, sometimes somebody would say something like, and you think, yeah, right, we are okay. But with her, you know, with Caroline, you know 100% that that's
Yeah,
exactly what she would be doing. You know what I mean? Getting the mop out
yeah, yeah.
and the rest of it, because she's.
I she'll definitely hate me for saying this, but so we bought all this new kit for the players, and we bought the club shop in house, and yeah, everything's been planned as well as you can, and then the kit turns up and it looks great. Everything looks great, and the track suits, sort of the old-fashioned ones where you have to get them to the right length, cut the bottom off, and turn them up with that iron-on tape. So we've got 20 players with tracksuit bottoms that look about 2 foot long for them. They literally come out over the end of their shoe, and we've had them all embroidered with Chelmsford City. So it's not like we can return them. And so she's like, "Well, we just have to turn them up, won't we?" She's there ready to turn them all up, and I'm like, "Look, we'll just buy some more. I'm not having you sitting here turning up our tracksuit bottoms." But she's ready to turn them all up and iron them all on, and she'll do anything that she thinks will help the club. So it's great. It's
Yeah.
brilliant.
Have you sent them to
So I did tell Adam Drew, our head of recruitment, we could only sign players over 6 foot 5 moving forward, but he wasn't too keen on that.
and Adam, again, somebody that I know quite well as well. You know, I mean, he's another great character to have on board.
I don't know other clubs as well, but I think most clubs at this level are so dependent on really good volunteers. There's some of them get some money for their expenses, some of them get a little bit of money, some of them just do it for the love of the game. But none of them are probably paid as much as they should be getting paid for doing it, and they're the lifeline of the club. They, we've, you know, without them, we've been to Chelmsford. We have to take our stands up and down between the season. There's so much that gets done that just would be impossible without them. So they're the lifeline of the club. They really are.
We'll just speak to Craig just for a second, and we'll come back to you in a second, Spence. But Craig, I mean, first game in step two, and I mean, couldn't have asked for a better day, could you?
In the end, yeah. When the game finishes and it's 2-0, it's a great day. But yeah, it was a really exciting time. Same as Chelmsford, I imagine. You know, the town talking about it for the week leading up to, or the weeks leading up to it, rather. We had a great turnout. I think it was close to 1,800 there. We were helped at Cardiff. We were playing Thursday night. Swansea were away, so it was quite a few Cardiff supporters that I did see up there, so that helped. But yeah, it was a great day, and you know, it's something we can build on. It was a tough game, and one that we could have been trailing in by a half time. But credit to our goalkeeper and the boys in general, they dug in and made us difficult to beat. And you know, we're gonna have quality then going forward where we can hurt sides, and proved to be the case with a goal. I think it was around 82 minutes we scored. And then again in stoppage time to win it. So yeah, it's a great day at the end. But yeah, it's I don't know if it's enjoyable during the 90 minutes. I'm not so sure about that. But afterwards, yeah, it's a great feeling.
Good to get Lewis back and puts it away for you as well.
Yeah, he's come back. He's looking really sharp at the moment. He's working really hard as well, in fairness to him. He's just so composed when he does get an opportunity. You're confident that he's going to slot it away. So yeah, it was a big thing for us to have him back. And he just fits in so well with the players we've got there. He was on the end of season trip with the boys when he went away on their tour. Like all clubs to Ibiza, I think that's where everybody goes. So he was on that trip with them, and still, you know, he socializes with a lot of the players outside of football as well. So you know, it's perfect because there's no issues with them coming into that changing room, because you don't always know when you sign new players how they're going to fit in and what have you. But yeah, brilliant to have him back. And like I said, his composure is so good that as soon as he went through, you just knew he was going to slot it home.
And in your next game, you're coming down towards me, aren't you? For your next game.
We're in Peterborough on Saturday, Peterborough Sports Saturday. So yes, it's the start of the many miles we'll be doing this season. But look, if you'd asked us this time last year, we would have jumped at the chance to have this opportunity. So we're looking forward to it, and all the challenges it brings, and we'll see where it takes us.
Did you want the season to stop now? Because that puts you in the playoff semis, doesn't it?
We joined top, yeah. I think we're second on alphabetical order at the moment, so we take that right now. Yeah, so it's a good start. But yeah, if we could end it now, we'd be happy with that.
Easy this step two, isn't it?
I'm not sure. It just shows sadly the levels that you go up. You know, it's just one league, but it felt at times like there was two or three levels within that, to be honest. So 2-0, you know, you always think, oh, it's comfortable. If it's two, it wasn't comfortable by any stretch of imagination. As I said, we could have been trailing a half time. Our goalkeeper Jamie Cogman made a couple of brilliant saves, and it's time to think of this. You know, you could see the levels within it, and it did take some of the players time to adjust to that and realize that they've got to be a bit quicker both on the ball and off the ball, which is natural. You know, when you're not used to playing that level, there's no doubting that these players can play at this level ability wise. They've got so much talent, and they're all, you know, it's a young squad we have there as well. So you know, it's exciting times. But yeah, you can see the difference within the first kind of 25 minutes that, right, okay, we're gonna have to be on our toes here. We're gonna have to be a little bit better this season. So
I mean, it's not an hard league, is it? I mean, you've only got teams like Hereford, Scarborough, then you've got Darlington, you've got Telford, you've got South Shields, Kidderminster, Chorley, Chester, Macclesfield. Nothing really.
It's great though. You know, you name those teams there, and you know, just that excitement of playing those teams and going to play at those grounds and against such big clubs is what we're in it for, and it's brilliant. And you know, I can remember being a kid back in the days when we were in the conference, Vauxhall Conference as it was, and some of those teams coming down to play, and so it's great to play them again. And our supporters will have been to some of those grounds. So, you know, I think Saturday we take in, I think it's two coaches and a minibus maybe away. Plus there'll be a few in cars, so we'll have a good crowd going away Saturday again. And it's just, you know, everybody's so excited for this season. So, you know, the Hereford game, especially when we play them, will be a very lively game. I'd imagine that when we played them, I don't know, 6 7 years ago on a Boxing Day, and it was a huge crowd there. You know, our ground was absolutely packed that day because they brought well over 1,000 with them that day. So that'll be one to look forward to. But as you say, there's so many games and big clubs for us to look forward to this year. It's really exciting.
And I bet the big man had a big smile on his face this weekend, didn't he? I bet he did.
I was thinking of this. I called my parents out Saturday morning, and he used to live just opposite, and just looking out the window of the house, and I thought, you know, he'd have loved this today. He really would have.
So, I mean, how many new players did you bring into the squad this year?
We've only brought in, you know, we've brought in three or four, I think it is. We managed to keep all bar one. Kane Simpson has gone to Taunton. He's a good move there. But other than that, I think everybody has signed back, which was the main thing, because as I said earlier, you know, we've got a real talented young group of players there who can grow together, to be honest. If they do stick together, which they've decided to. So yeah, we needed to bring in a few because we haven't got reserve team there. We can't dual reg players being under the umbrella of the FAW. So we can't sign players on a dual reg. So we needed to bring in a few to strengthen it, but we still only got a squad of around 20, 21 players at the moment. So we signed a few. But yeah, it's going to be tough with so many games in this league, you know, those extra games. And I think it's something with the cup games, like 48 games in the season, is it? So that's if we don't win a cup game. So, you know, it's going to be a big squad effort. And that was shown Saturday with five subs coming on, and they all contributed massively towards the win, to be fair.
But was there sort of a deep sort of oh, thank God for that type of thing when Ricardo put his name on the forms?
Yeah, look, as I said, we've got so many good quality players, and obviously Ricardo gets applauded for the amount of goals that he scored for us. And there was a lot of talk: would he stay? Was he going to go? You know, there's quite a few clubs sniffing around Ricardo. But we got a squad of so many players that we didn't want to lose anybody, truth be told. It would have been a blow to lose if we'd lost it, you know, numerous players within that squad. So I think, you know, it was a big thing every time we'd announce a player on social media. All the fans would be brilliant, right? Well, next one, now when's the next one? And there was a lot of excitement around it because, you know, sometimes you sign players and that excitement is there. But with us, there was the same excitement when we signed the boys back from last year, to be fair. So yeah, like it's a big season for everybody ahead. And if he can get some of those goals that he scored last year, we can have a good season.
And getting Lewis back must have been a massive boost as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, for the changing room as well, the boys know him, so it was easy for him to settle in. And you know, within a couple of weeks, he's like he hasn't been away, to be honest. But again, that quality that he adds to us, and obviously he's been with Yeovil full time for a period, so he's come back looking so sharp. And you know, his general play Saturday, it was excellent. His work rate was really good, and then he gets that chance, and he's composed enough to, as the ball dropped to his feet, I got up off the seat because he just thought, this is the one where he's going to score. If he gets a chance, he's got that composure, and he slotted it in very calmly, and yeah, got us off and running. So no, it's a very talented squad. It's a very young squad, and it's very exciting to see where they can go this season.
Did you have anybody from the FAW there at the weekend?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. I wouldn't imagine there was anybody there. I don't think they love us at the moment. So yeah, I don't think there's anybody there.
But you were saying that you know the way things are going at the minute though, you know, Murphy could be going this way and Cardiff could be coming the other way, couldn't
Well, you know, it's
he?
probably not helped us, to be honest, because we went up a league, they came down a league, so we closed that gap by two leagues. But you know, there was a lot of support that came to watch Merthyr last year because Cardiff weren't winning games. And they don't like the product there, and so they left and come to us, and they loved it with us. They absolutely, you know, they some of these fans there started coming to away games with us, and it was a big thing. But you know, concern is if Cardiff start winning more games now because they've dropped down that league, and you'd expect them to be up the top of that league, you know, will a lot of those fans then go back because they want to see Cardiff winning games, and all of a sudden that can hit your crowd a bit. So we'll have to see. Time will tell on that, but. I think they like the fact that they can, you know, come to our level of football. They can have a pint while they're watching a game, and they, you know, they get to have photos and speak to players. It's a lot more of a personal thing when you come to this level of football. Whereas at Cardiff, they see those players on that pedestal. They can't get anywhere near them. They say they can have a pint, but they've got to be in the concourse to have a drink. And I think all that adds to the football at its level. So. Fingers crossed they'll stay with us and they enjoy the way that we do play football. But yeah, we might be affected by that a little bit this season, to be honest.
I've got a question to ask both of you because, you know, normally at the beginning of a football season, you get new rules that sort of come into effect. And all of a sudden, these new rules, and you see it, especially in the Premier League and across non-league as well, where all of a sudden it goes crazy and social media goes crazy about the rule and it just goes a bit potty for the first sort of 5 or 6 weeks. Well, I was really surprised this weekend, and I'm not sure if there was anything at Chelmsford or if there was anything at your game at Merthyr as well. This 8 second rule with the goalkeepers. I was baffled that there was no talk about it. I've seen over social media anywhere where an incident possibly happened. Didn't happen at the game I was at, and I'm assuming it didn't happen at either your game. So was you a little bit surprised that it wasn't more over social media with people complaining about the counting of the how long it was, and this goalkeeper took 10 seconds or this goalkeeper took that? I mean, there didn't seem to be any sort of talk about it across social media at all.
No, from our perspective, there was nothing in the game. I think I do remember Cogs, probably we were 1-0 up at the time, holding on till the very last second, and we were shouting at him to kick it. But no, there wasn't any. I mean, 8 seconds in football's a long time, to be honest. The only concern I have with it is it might encourage, like, whereas normally a keeper might get rid of that ball after 5, 6 seconds. And I don't know if a team goes one up, whether it's going to encourage them every single time to hold on to that ball for 8 seconds, which actually can slow the game down more than it would have previously with that rule. Because keepers think, well, I'll just wait now. For the 8 seconds, whereas previously there was a thing, I remember years ago, it was 6 seconds, wasn't it? Where you could only have the ball for six seconds. And it was a kind of unofficial rule that was still what it was. So.
Well, I saw a referee. I don't know who the referee was. It was on here the other day on Sky, and he was saying that rule is never. That was an official rule.
Yeah.
They never used to sort of like implement it.
No.
He said the rule sort of just got sort of looked over type thing. So that rule was always there for the 6 seconds. But I was quite surprised, even the game I was at, because you do see it, don't you? Where you know when you know if a referee, if so, if a goalkeeper's got the ball, you're in the crowd going one, two, three, especially what I'm expecting to happen at youth games when the youth games start. You know, of all the parents sort of like counting for these poor little referees, you know, youngsters that are going to referee these games. But there was no counting, no mention of it whatsoever at the game I was at. And the game I was at, you could have thought it possibly would have been because it was two people that are going to be fighting it out for the league possibly at the end of the season. Do you know what I mean? Playing each other on the first day of the season. But did you see anything, Spencer, at all?
Not on Saturday. No, we had a pre-season. I was trying to remember who it was against. A couple of games ago, where the referee was. I was up in the director's seat, and I could hear him shouting, three, four, five, counting out so loud, just obviously to give the keeper the best chance. And we did get a memo round saying they'd seen the FA had seen players, strikers trying to stop keepers releasing it after 8 seconds, so they got the corners. And that if that happened in matches, they'd be booking the players for doing that. So whether that sort of stopped it that happening a bit, but no, we had nothing on Saturday at all.
It was just weird, wasn't it? I mean, because you understand where I'm coming from. Normally, with a rule like that, you would see it all over social media, and this person held onto the ball too long, or person held onto it, or whatever.
I wouldn't imagine the referees would want to give the corner, to be honest,
No,
because
exactly.
they're gonna get so much abuse if they do, even though they're just enforcing a rule. So I don't think they'd want to do it, but yeah, be interesting.
It was one of those
Yeah.
ones we expected to happen at the beginning of the season, and by
Yeah.
game five, game six,
It's a bit more lenient.
oh,
Yeah.
and it's up in 10 seconds or whatever, but literally nothing whatsoever.
It'll be the Premiership where Premier League where it'll happen, won't it?
Well, I think the biggest culprit for that might be Onana at the weekend because he's not
Yeah.
necessarily the greatest, is he? So he probably let's hope he holds on to it for as long as possible, especially.
I'm a man. I did find he usually doesn't catch a ball and hold it for that long anyway. So it's usually gone in a split second anyway.
Well, I mean, with this new set, I mean, how with the build up going through, I mean, from her first sort of going into step two of for yourself, Spencer, sort of like being your first full season actually being your club. I mean, what was the sort of excitement like building up sort of from the end of last season to this season? I mean, Spencer first. I mean, what was it like for you? With the excitement, I mean, have you sort of been counting down the days, or have you been that busy setting things up for this season that you've not had a chance to count down the days?
It's been really exciting. Yeah, we made, as I say, going full time was such a big change for the club. We literally, everyone thinks we've spent fortunes because we've signed 16 players, but actually we only had two players, as I say, from last season. So we had to. So we've still got an 18-man squad with two academy boys joining us. So it was exciting because we were announcing new signings every other day almost. It will take time for them to set. The pitch is looking better than it's ever looked. We've done a lot of work around the ground, so it's been ridiculously busy. We had two big signings that we were working on. One worked, one didn't. That took up a huge amount of time, and so when it got to it was almost just by the time we kicked off on Saturday, I was really quite stressed because it had sort of. We put so much into the last 2 or 3 months trying to get everything perfect. And I was like, just bloody winter though. I don't care how you do it. And we were, my first game last year, we had 600 people there. And we August is always quiet for us because of cricket and holidays. So we didn't know what to expect, but we hoped the momentum had picked up and we might get 1,000. And we had 1,572. So it was brilliant. There was a real buzz around the place. We'd had Arsenal under 21s the week before and had just over 3,000 in the ground. So there was a real buzz leading up to it. And then when it kicked off, I was just absolutely, I stood the whole game. I normally sit for most of it, and I stood the whole game. I was so anxious. And even when we scored and went 1-0 up, that was where I just kept telling myself, we're full time, we're going to be fitter than them. That's the saving grace. The last 20 minutes, we'll be fine. Sort of fingers crossed, hoping for the best. And actually, it did look a little bit like that we controlled the last 20 quite nicely and scored in the 80th. But up until I think it was the 96th minute, it was still nerve-wracking. And now that's gone, it feels fine again. But it was just so much that we'd been trying to put in place that it was like, we need to win. We need to keep that momentum going. And then once that's done, fine, results will be results. But it was really important we won on Saturday, I think.
Have you got sort of big things that plans that you're looking to put into effect still? I mean, with the club.
Yeah, huge. I was talking to the council down there this morning because obviously our ground's owned by the council. We're looking at a new stadium. That's no secret. It's a long-term plan. It's a five-year plan. We're having some good conversations with the landowner and the council about that. So, fingers crossed. There's some potential there. We're looking at a training facility where we can. Make more of a centre of excellence in Essex with some other sports teams. And then we're looking at what we can do at the current ground and with a view that becomes more of a community hub for us once we've, assuming we can get the new stadium where we headquarter the women's team and the academy and the youth team and their walking team. So we've got huge, huge plans for the club, but all of this takes time, money, and effort. So yeah, we'll just keep trying to push along each day and improve each day.
And I suppose if she was here tonight, I mean, I suppose one of the biggest things that I suppose Conor would love to do would be presenting Sky Sports when Chelmsford are playing.
Oh, I'm sure she would. I have to visualise everything. And for me, it's visualising a game at Wembley. That's the real. I'd love to be in the Premier League and all that sort of stuff. But for me, the dream has always been Wembley. And it'd be great having Caroline commentating on a game in Wembley. Yeah, this trophy this year, maybe. That's the easiest option for us. Not that any of them are easy, but definitely going to be easier than the FA Cup, I guess, or anything like that. But yeah,
But
we'll see.
then she'll be contacting you. She'll be saying, "You're sending those tracksuits around now, quick, so we're all sorted
Yeah,
out."
they need to look smart. Yeah.
Yourself, Craig, was you I mean, you must have been, you, Paul, and the rest of the team must have been absolutely buzzing, thinking about what was coming up.
Yes, it's exciting for everybody. As I say, I live in Merthyr, so every time I go to town or somebody nip into a shop, there'd be somebody wanting to talk over there. I've seen so many Merthyr shirts again this year, which is great. And the amount of kids buying the home out and away shirts has been fantastic. So there's been a lot of excitement, but you've got to get pre-season done and those friendly games, which is so important as a staff to get your ideas across and the way we want to play across. And you do all that, but last Thursday we finished training Thursday night, and that excitement started building. And Friday is you're like a kid at Christmas Eve, trying not to think of it too much. You won't go to sleep if you think about it, and all after at the start. And you turn up on a Saturday full of excitement, but also really nervous at the same time, and hoping that bubble doesn't burst really, really quickly on the first day. So it's been fantastic getting to Saturday, but it's a strange one, because it seems like the season ended a long time ago, and then all of a sudden the new season started really quickly all of a sudden. So it's been an exciting time, but I'm glad we're back into it now, and it's the real football has begun.
So, if you're nice journeys at the weekend, I mean, what time? What? Just put it into some kind of context, because some people look at non-league football and go, "Yeah, well, they've probably played their neighbours, or they play this one, or they play that one." What sort of time in the morning for a 3 o'clock kickoff, Spencer? Do you know what time you're leaving on Saturday?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's going to be between 8 and 9 in the morning, I guess.
What about yourself, Craig? Do you know?
Yeah, same for us. I think we're about 4 hours away, is it? So,
Same for us.
That's one of our shorter trips, I suppose. So, when we're in South Shields this year and places like that, and look, it is what it is. We've got the boys have a nice bus that we travel on, and if we win, it's a great trip home. So we just look forward to it.
We got knocked out the trophy by Peterborough last year. So I've not got good memories there, but it's a nice little setup. So it'd be worth the trip there.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Looking forward to it.
I mean, we talk about that journeys, and I know I talk about this club quite often on the show. But Mousel, I mean, you saw them, some of the journeys that they had last year in the, in the Southern League South. They were leaving at St. Stephen at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? It was just crazy. And teams that had visited Mousel not getting back until the following morning for an evening game. Do you know what I mean? And like sort of like just crazy. But how do you? I suppose as a coach, it's been more for yourself, Craig, than for Spencer. How do you sort of get those players still sort of loose as such? When you've got a game with a massive coach journey, how difficult is that to make sure that they're actually sort of, loose, not getting off that coach and then pulling hamstrings or getting tight, whatever it may be?
The boys will have a routine by now at this stage. They've done it for years, and we try where we can to have a stop on the way. So I'm at a midpoint in the services somewhere, just for them to get off and stretch your legs and grab a tea or coffee or something on the way. And then we do aim to get there like an hour and a half before at least. It doesn't always work with the traffic in this country, so and the roads. But we try to do that and give them a bit of time then to go. They're gonna have a little walk around the pitch and stretch your legs, and we got two physios that come with us, so they can get a rub down before the game, and we'll try and provide as professional environment as we can with the resources that we have. But yeah, it is difficult. I mean, some of the longer trips I think we're gonna have 4 overnight stays this year, which we haven't done in our time at the club. But South Shields away, as I say, for instance, it's not one we can go up and back in a day, really, realistically. So, I think the plan for that will be we'll travel so far on a Friday, have an evening meal and get our heads down, and then get up and probably go for a walk on the Saturday, and then jump on a coach and do the rest of the trip from there. But no, it is tough, and this is what people don't realize that, when they look at these professionals on the telly and they're flying the games and they're there day before and sometimes 2 days before, it's a totally different environment. And as you say, those midweek games, we have boys get back at sometimes 3 in the morning and ended up for work at 6. It's really, really difficult for them, but they enjoy it. It's what they want to do. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here, because a lot of our players have had offers of more money at other clubs, to be honest, with less travelling, but have chose to stay with us because of the club, because of the environment, because because the way we play. So, credit to them for that.
I'm supposed to do you got final question, do you go out on the coach or for away games, or do you travel up on by yourself?
Depends where it is. So I only did it once last year. I try and let the guys have their own space for doing that. I don't go into changing rooms or anything like that, really. I don't go to changing rooms. I am going on a coach down to Weston, purely because I'm on my own, and all my family and kids and wife are just gone on holiday yesterday, so I'm on my own. So I'm going to jump on the coach. When we played Torquay last year, I'd been up in the Lake District on holiday, so me and my son drove down to Exeter and stayed with them overnight in the hotel, which was really cool for me and for my son. And then we drove down to the match, which was really nice. But yeah, normally I let them do their own thing, and we have a pretty similar routine. If it's up to 4 hours, it's we used to do a couple of pickups by the M25, so we'd stop once or twice, stretch the legs. Anything over 4 hours, it's generally an overnight. The killer for us last year, we part time last year, was going down to Bath. Literally, it got called off when we got there. And you then got a Tuesday night in Bath, having gone there, gone back. Tuesday night in Bath, you can't really do an overnight because the players have got jobs the next day. So even if they wanted to, they've got to get back for work. It's things like that that, yeah, as you say, not everyone appreciates quite the sort of the lifestyle that footballers have all the time. It's not the luxury flights here, there, and everywhere. It's getting a coach back from Bath on a Tuesday night to get in at 3, 4 in the morning or whatever. And not just the players, the media team that go down, and all of those guys that give their time up for nothing to do it as well. So yeah, not don't.
I think a trip home from Bath was one of my favourite. Was one of my favourite trips actually on a coach, because we went down. I can't think it was FA Trophy, FA Cup, with Harlow, and we got a draw in the first game at Harlow. Went down to Bath, sort of I don't know, three divisions up or whatever else it was at the time, and ended up turning them over quite easily at their place. It was quite a nice trip home. That one was.
They're always better after a result like that,
But listen, guys, time's run away from us. It's been an absolute pleasure, and to have Spencer on for the first time, a real pleasure speaking to you, sir. And I really appreciate your time, and I wish everybody at Chelmsford all the very, very best for the season. And of course, to my old mate Craig, massive thank you for coming on. Hopefully,
No
you'll
problem.
get a lot more of Craig in the weeks to come as well, and more from Merthyr as well as we continue our journey to Merthyr series for the rest of this series of the non-league show. But from me, from Craig and from Spencer, a massive thank you, and we'll be back next week with hopefully a nice tribute show next weekend next week, which we've got planned for next week. But until then, thank you and good night.